In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
And welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today we're going to have two different discussions. The first one Mike brought to me as a discussion. It has to do with something near and dear to him. He's got it plastered all over his arm. It's a Led Zeppelin musical thing. Now, I'm not a big Led Zeppelin fan. We've stated this before.
Yeah, very much so.
But my favorite song by Led Zeppelin, if I have any, is the song Stairway to Heaven, which really, I know that really kind of ticks off Led Zeppelin fans because like that's kind of their least favorite song because it is the most well played and it's the one that like literally everybody who doesn't like Zeppelin or even the people who say they do but really don't. It's always about Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, totally. It's the most popular song.
I am smart enough to know that that in Wayne's World, when he's playing on the guitar and then the guy in the guitar place points out the sign that says no stairway,
yeah.
He is not playing any part of Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
I know that because I'm at least musically knowledgeable enough to know that.
Yes.
But and by the way, anybody who knows me would actually think that there's other songs that I would like of Zeppelin's because I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. Huge Lord of the Rings fan. So I know Zeppelin dabbled in a few songs that had
Ramble On, dude.
Yes. That's the one. Every time I listen to that, I'm like, wait, oh right, this is the one Led Zeppelin song that is talking about Mordor and the ring and all that crap.
Yep.
So but luckily enough for me, what Mike is going to be talking to us about is the song I like, Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah. Now, first, I'm going to open this up because Led Zeppelin, as controversial as they are still one of my favorite groups. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I actually like Greta Van Fleet, too. And a lot of people are just going to turn the damn thing off at this point.
Interestingly enough, I actually,
for knowing that,
I enjoy Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
To me, Greta Van Fleet sounds like what I had always hoped Led Zeppelin would sound like. I personally find them to be way better. Again, all Led Zeppelin fans are mad at me at this point.
Zeppelin 1 and Zeppelin 2 have this straight ahead, even though they were all produced by, essentially they were co-produced by Jimmy Page, who is a studio genius. He really is. Yeah. He knows how to mess with tape. He knew how to do stuff. Well, he introduced a lot that most rock bands didn't know anything about. They were like the first band I've ever heard of that put a theremin in their music aside from the Beach Boys, I think. And they had done that beforehand, but the way that they did it was different. They turned Dazed and Confused as an acid trip for like a minute and a half, and it's fantastic.
Well, oh, crap, I had something I was going to say.
I'm sorry, I distracted you.
Jimmy Page was also, from my understanding, known for his unique way of playing chords and his weird finger positions while he was playing things. As compared, I remember watching something, I think it was Jimmy Page, Jack White, and...
It Might Get Loud is the name of that documentary.
Was it Edge? Was it the Edge?
Yeah.
From U2. And Jimmy Page showing them the way that he played certain things and it being in totally different positions on the neck from what Edge or Jack White had ever learned how to play.
Yeah.
The different chords or the different ways of doing things. And he's just very, very much a different guy in the way he viewed music.
Jimmy Page was very much like is still alive. Jimmy Page is very much like what Les Paul was. Les Paul was looking at the entire picture and how many things can I do with all of this equipment? Very much like Jimi Hendrix was the same mindset. He looked at something and found out how to break it and make it do things that he didn't want or that most people didn't consider.
Or in a much more modern era for people, somebody that you've gotten some experience on the way that he works with a guitar, Tom Morello.
Yes.
You've learned a lot of Rage stuff recently.
Yeah, I did. I learned a lot of Rage Against the Machine stuff. And Tom Morello, he's a rule breaker, man. The same with Jimmy is that he just thought about things in studio very differently from most stuff. And what most people don't know about Led Zeppelin's music is that he was behind the console and he was helping engineer and he was designing the palette of all these songs well, as involved as he was in the guitar playing.
And I think maybe that may be why some people have there are some people that are really fond of the music, and there's some people mm-hmm. have you know, the one or two hit songs, maybe three or four hit songs that they kind of cling to, but beyond that, don't really get into to Zeppelin's music, because a lot of it has a much more of an experimental vibe to it.
Yeah.
And you get something like Greta Van Fleet, and that is a much more coalesced, single vision kind of music.
Yeah,
that has a basis in the sound that, that again, the popular Zeppelin songs mm-hmm. had, but it's so much more a polished, finished product, where I think Zeppelin was again, more experimenting, more trying to find sound than polishing and setting out a specific thing. Exactly, and
there is a special thing about Led Zeppelin in the fact that they were doing it when all of these recording techniques were fresh. They were these guys that were really trying to go, okay, what can we do with this? What can we do with this? Greta Van Fleet is a band that has the songs themselves written and take basically the youth of Led Zeppelin and add 50, 60 years worth of recording prowess to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like straight ahead production that is meant perfect, specifically. Polished product. It specifically emulates the most popular portions of Led Zeppelin's music to a general mass. It's intended to be that.
And it's fun. It's fun, good music, but it's definitely a finished, polished product in the way that Led Zeppelin's kind of wasn't. It was so much more experimental during that time period. Yeah. Another example to use would be a somewhat contemporary tune. Not a contemporary, a kind of follow up mm-hmm. in Britain to Led Zeppelin, Queen. In that there are
somewhat up to a point, yeah. Brian May was very involved in that recording process too.
Yeah, and there are some of their songs that are polished and these wonderful great things, and then so many other of their songs are so experimental.
Yeah.
And so out there.
I mean, oh, they were everywhere.
Even their most popular song, or one of their most popular songs, is truly an experimental song. So many different time signatures, so many different styles of music in one song, mm-hmm. styles of singing, overdubbing, and recording stuff that, I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is like a real mishmash of a song.
Oh, there's so much. Once they got into arpeggiated synth and that kind of stuff, you had Radio Gaga came out. And then you have a crazy little thing called Love, which is completely in the other direction of either one of those.
That's like a rockabilly song in the middle of a British band. What do they know about rockabilly?
Right, exactly. No, that's what a lot of people were, you know, they were barred from that.
And yet it's a great little song. But that's why I think for some people Led Zeppelin may be a little difficult. That's why I think it is difficult for me to get into.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from the musician side of things,
yeah,
which is typically the people that I have that are most solid on being Led Zeppelin fans and pull the deep cuts, so the people that are really musicians themselves or producers somehow involved in making music,
yeah,
they can see some of that more wild stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
Some of that more experimental and figuring things out. But we're talking about, though, a pretty polished song. But anyway, you're talking about Page.
Relatively. I was talking about essentially Led Zeppelin in general. So the thing about Led Zeppelin is they're obviously not without their severe amount of controversy, especially during the early recordings worked with, because
you mentioned Dazed and Confused.
Yes. There's also other ones. Whole Lot of Love is another one.
Yeah, there's a lot of, what he's referring to is there's a lot of songs of theirs that were originally done by American blues artists.
Yes.
And Zeppelin kind of, I guess you could say they did covers of them, but they kind of reworked them as their own thing and didn't always at the time ascribe the proper credit to the original songwriters.
That's essentially it. So basically what would happen in these situations, from everything I can gather, and I looked this stuff up, I actually took a rock history course some years ago, and nice. I was very, I was floored when I heard the original version of Dazed and Confused.
Yeah,
listen to it.
It's a different thing.
How, you've got to be kidding me! How did this not get called out?
Yeah.
More recently, though, Whole Lot of Love was one that really got me. There is a song called "You Need Love" by Big Willie Dixon, blues legend.
Yeah.
Right, and it literally is the same lyrics as Whole Lot of Love. Now, what happened was the band had created a song and a backing palette for Robert Plant to sing over.
Yeah.
And when Robert Plant came in with his lyrics to do his stuff, what he had been doing is, and he had done this in multiple situations, and it just wasn't caught because maybe the rest of the guys didn't know, the record companies didn't know, who knew?
Well,
like, you didn't have a large database, like you have the internet to look up the lyrics for any song that you want.
I mean, keep in mind, we're both majorly avowed Metallica fans.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that the first couple of shows that they did, mm-hmm. they were doing King Diamond and Motorhead songs and passing them off as their own.
I didn't know they were passing them off as their own. I thought they were just like, hey, let's pull this cover out there real quick because only the metal fans are going to hear that and nobody else is really going to know.
They weren't, but basically they weren't, it's not so much they were passing it off as their own as that they weren't telling anybody that it wasn't their songs.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they were just playing them and not necessarily making it known that they were playing cover songs. They were just playing songs.
I was going to say, well, here's the catch on that. Because they were only playing them live, they weren't putting them on their records.
Yes.
And that's
a different thing.
That's a vast difference between throwing something on a record.
If I remember correctly, even they acknowledged the fact that they kind of did it knowing that the majority of the people in the scene that were there watching it wouldn't have any idea that it wasn't their music.
Right.
They were just playing music that they knew and they had learned.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like it was a secret kept for a long time. It only happened with the first couple shows, so they had enough of their own music to play fully a show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they were kind of sort of just letting people have that suspension of belief as to who wrote the music.
Exactly.
So, I mean, these things can and do happen even with the best of bands at various points. But I can say Metallica was very good once they did any kind of recording of anything to give proper credit due to anybody that was the writing of it. And in fact, multiple times have worked with their various heroes that they've done covers for.
Totally.
Covers of.
And in that due time, they did also show a vast amount of appreciation, actually relatively early on. These guys are less than 10 years in. They're throwing out covers and stuff like that.
Actually, I think there was the Am I Evil cover was on the B-side of Creeping Death, the Creeping Death single.
Oh, was it? Oh, so they were doing it way past, but they also put the proper songwriting credits on it because they knew they were going to get, you know, it's not about whether or not they knew they were going to get caught. They weren't trying to get,
they were trying
dishonest,
to be appropriate.
But they're being appropriate. So that being said, obviously, in many instances, Zeppelin was not this honest, but at the same time, it was Plant that knew that that was the case, and the rest of the guys not so much. Now, here's the issue that we're getting at today. So their most popular song, Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven,
right?
Yes.
Here is the catch on that. There is a band called Spirit.
There was a band
called Spirit that Zeppelin actually was, they did like a show or two with.
Yeah.
Back in the late 60s.
So back before the album 4
came
out.
They toured shortly with Led Zeppelin. Now, back in, I want to say this like 68 or so, 68, 69.
Again, it's important that it was before the album 4 came out, Led Zeppelin 4.
Yes, it was before the album Led Zeppelin 4 came out. As a matter of fact, they were looking at the writing dates of the song and all this kind of stuff. So basically, Spirit had a song that they did in 1967 or 68, it was released, called Taurus. And Taurus starts with what's called a descending chromatic scale, starting with the root of A.
Okay.
So it goes down, and I'm not going to sing it or anything like that. You guys can look it up. You can Google it, or you can YouTube it. It's everywhere.
Or we can we can also maybe attach a link.
We'll see about linking these when we do this.
I know there's enough videos on YouTube of both of these.
Especially comparisons oh man, how could you do this, or how could you?
Yeah.
You know, how could you do this and not give credit? Blah blah blah. So here's the issue. Spirit is a descending chromatic scale in the key of A.
Yeah.
Stairway to Heaven is also a descending chromatic scale in the key of A. The difference between the two is that the root chord that they end on at the end of the run, before the run starts, and now this is the very beginning of the song only.
Yeah.
Both songs are different lengths of time, and both of them go in completely different directions
the introductory thing that starts off Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
That the for those of us who are not necessarily as musically inclined, although I do know what you're saying
with the
chromatics. In fact, I think I taught you pentatonic scale. I didn't teach you chromatic, but I knew chromatic at the same
pentatonic
time.
Pentatonic scales, the box, man.
Yeah. Chromatic is literally just down, you can play a chromatic scale down one string of the guitar.
Yeah.
But
Basically, what a chromatic scale is it's every note in the scale. Yeah. So the chromatic scale is all 12 notes in the entire scale. But when you have a descending chromatic scale, it means that it starts at a note and then it moves down one half note.
So at the beginning, in succession. What he's talking about is at the beginning of Stairway to Heaven, the finger picking stuff, the pretty kind of note sounds that are coming out. That's what we're talking about. That beginning
the
part
finger
of the
picking section of the note, which is essentially the descending chromatic scale, and the chords that follow it, the arpeggiated chords, are extremely similar. Where they break, that is a 5-note descending scale.
Okay.
In the key of A. Where they end is a completely different area.
Okay.
Led Zeppelin's ends in A minor.
Okay.
And Spirit's ends in a D chord of sorts. I don't know where it is, like what the exact D chord is. I don't have a major in music theory, but I do know that the two of them end with root notes that establish the key. Yeah. In different keys. Even though they run the same scale at the beginning, they end their keys differently. So the establishing chord in Taurus is a D of sorts. I don't know which one it is. But
out of curiosity, what's the finger pattern?
The finger pattern on
for the Taurus one.
It's relatively similar.
For the last chord. What
I don't know.
Okay, you don't know the exact.
Yeah, I don't know what the finger pattern is. I've just heard it, and I know that it's a D note. That's the root of that chord, but I don't know what the finger pattern is.
Yeah, because
it could be a minor.
It could be a suspended.
Yeah, it could be a D sus. I have no idea. But again, I'm not like a super music theorist, so bear with me.
Those are just the three that I actually know and know the finger pattern for.
It's essentially easy to tell that those two chords are very separate.
Yeah.
What Led Zeppelin does with their version of the song is they do the same descending chromatic scale in A, and the supporting two notes that create the chords are similar. But the first thing they do is they add a high melody to the descension.
Extra strings being picked at the same time.
And then on top of that, they end it in A minor.
Okay. So you're saying it's fuller, it has more notes.
Yes.
And then it ends on a different chord.
Yes.
So
and then on top of that, after this introduction, which is played like, you know, in the first section of the Zeppelin song, it plays it through the first verse. Then it goes into a break that is a completely different version of the song. And there's three major sections with Led Zeppelin's song, so it doesn't go back to this descending chord. Now, Spirit's version doesn't do that either, but Spirit's is more like a psychedelic jam.
It's a totally different type of song.
Yeah, it's a completely different feeling song.
So,
but here's the issue.
Okay.
Let's just say, for the sake of similarity, that the two riffs are similar enough to be mistaken for each other. Okay? By themselves. Remove the backing music, remove all that stuff, and listen to those two pieces.
Okay.
The problem here, and the legal issue, is that the guitarist who wrote the riff, I can't remember his name. I think it's like Randy something. Essentially, the guy who wrote the riff died some years ago.
Okay.
Okay. So let me get some information real quick. Let's see. Randy Wolf. Randy Wolf is the guy that wrote the Spirit riff for Taurus. Now, he passed away some years ago.
Okay.
And from some rumors have it that he may or may not have had really any issue with what Led Zeppelin did. But after he passed, this lawsuit was established.
By who? Spirit or his
By Randy's estate.
Okay, so his estate, the estate filed a lawsuit against Led Zeppelin, claiming infringement on intellectual property from the creation of this riff.
Yes.
Claiming that it was Randy's riff and Led Zeppelin took the riff.
Yes.
And
the idea is they plagiarized the guitar riff, and then
most people
wrote another song
have no idea who the band Spirit is and the song Taurus is.
They didn't launch off for a particularly long period of time.
And Led Zeppelin is huge the world over,
right?
And
so obviously
Stairway
there's a lot of money that's possible here. Okay,
and so this is more of a hey, that riff is we think that riff is Randy's, we want the money from it.
Right, exactly. Kind of deep. They feel the estate of Randy Wolf basically feels entitled to songwriting credits for this opening riff.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there's enough argument here against them already being the fact that it's literally just the opening riff, and it only makes up not even a third of the song.
Yeah.
So
I can see that part of the argument.
A lot of the time, one third means a lot of the time in many agreed songwriting circles, if you write one third of the song, essentially, yeah. Like if you wrote the chorus of a song, yeah. You're entitled to half the royalties, man. Like when it comes down to song, when it comes down to that,
I can understand that.
Especially if you write the root of it, that is the glue that keeps it together.
Again, I can understand that, but at the same time,
like
I mean,
you should, if you write at least a third, you should share.
But this is a descending chromatic scale. This is just somebody exactly playing within a chromatic scale. I mean, does that mean that anytime you pop out, you're doing a song in, I don't know, G, and you pop out the G major, A minor pentatonic to write your solo in, or even write just write the bass line in it, anything that you do it in, suddenly you have to watch every single note that you play in which succession and how many times you play each note to make sure that you're not playing the same rhythm, the same exact set of notes. There's only 12 notes and only so many, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, I get it to some extent, but at the same time, that's a little... I don't know. To me, that's a little difficult.
Exactly. That is the argument right there. Exactly what you just stated.
Yeah.
Was the argument that won Led Zeppelin in court in this case.
So originally they won the case.
They've won the case. They won it actually back in 2016. So essentially what the idea was that these two riffs were similar, but they were different enough, especially as the songs themselves.
Yeah.
But that wasn't so much the argument as it was the fact that when you look at the riff itself, that descending scale, the scale exists in the public domain.
Okay, is this where this is becoming newsworthy again now? Why it's becoming a thing now? Or
it's become a thing now more recently because this case keeps getting appealed. And now what had happened was Michael Skidmore.
So hold on. Let's not get to there just yet.
Okay.
So what we're saying is the main reason that this was won was because they considered the scale to be part of public domain.
Yes.
Just like the four chords that make up a common four chord song.
Yes.
Thanks to
Axis of Awesome for that.
Oh, I love those guys for one.
Yeah.
For two though, if you really think about it, when you hear a couple of those songs together, they have the same basic chord progression because there's only so many chord progressions.
Exactly.
Then you have the Blues Traveler hook.
Oh yeah.
That chord progression.
Oh, what is it? Pachelbel's Canon.
Canon in D.
Canon in D.
I mean, that is again, no matter where you play it, it's the same damn chord progression. There's a bunch of songs based on that chord progression.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so many chord progressions that you're going to have.
Yeah.
And you can't say that, okay, I mean, now Pachelbel, that's such a long time ago, that music's in public domain.
Right.
But to say that, Vitamin C now owes money to Blues Traveler, because Vitamin C did that graduation song that was really big back in the late 90s, that is literally the exact same, it's Canon in D.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Yeah, there's certain progressions of things, chord progressions, note progressions that are just, there's only so much you can try to say is original product that's never been done by anybody else before, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's where this was won initially. So what's happening that, so now we know that. We know that this is won initially on that. It keeps getting appealed.
Yeah, it keeps getting appealed. The most recent appeal happened last year.
Okay.
And last September, the appeal was essentially... they won again in a federal appeals court.
Zeppelin did.
Yes.
Okay.
Zeppelin won again in federal appeals court. And what's so funny about this is that it literally took them, I think, I heard something about that took the jury like 15 hours of deliberation. No, it took the jury a number of hours of deliberation, and they were asked, they deliberated for 5 hours in June 2016. Before they decided unanimously in favor of Led Zeppelin in that appeal court. The funny part is the verdict in the Zeppelin case came down to within 15 minutes of the jury's request to re-listen to both Taurus and Stairway to Heaven. So all they did was they deliberated for 5 hours. Oh, well, this is this here and this is this. And they're like, can we just listen to it, please? Because these people aren't musical experts.
And so
they're just hearing it.
Just listening to it was
just literally
to
listening
go,
to the two of them nah, going, nah, nah, that's not nah, it. Like, nah. Which is hilarious.
Well, but I mean, I get it in the sense of, I kind of get the idea in the sense of if it was something that, that was written by you, for instance,
yeah,
and you heard something that was similar to what you had written by a band that made money, and let's face it, Mike, while I love your music, none of your bands have really made any money yet.
No.
I say yet. Never know what will happen in the future. Right. But if you heard somebody else have something that sounded similar, and they were like, you know, being invited to open for national bands and that kind of thing,
yeah,
go on tour with them and stuff, I can understand you'd be like, hey, that sounds like my stuff. Somebody sold my stuff. I get that kind of feeling.
Right.
But then you have outside listeners listening to it. Yeah, I mean, all they needed to do was listen and hear. So that happened in 2016. So what's happening today with this?
Okay.
Why you brought this to my attention today?
Because here's the thing about this case. The problem with this issue, when it comes down to music copyright, is that a riff this generic, if Spirit were to win this case,
this opens up the door for so many others.
Let's say this goes all the way to the Supreme Court.
It goes slippery slope.
Exactly. It becomes a slippery slope because you can't copyright a chord progression. You have to copyright. In order to copyright something, you need to be like, there needs to be so many similarities between the original work.
I mean, there's a major television network that has tried to copyright three notes.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
So, I mean, these things do happen.
Well, there are jingles, and they do. Yeah, they do happen.
So, I mean, they do. They do happen to an extent, but I can see what you're saying in this specific instance.
But if you were to put those three notes and make those three notes the focus of,
then you have
a case. But it's not like,
you can't play those three notes in a row.
Yeah,
in the scheme of something bigger, those three notes can happen in a row.
Right, they've copyrighted it as a jingle for their station.
So the concern here is if this lawsuit is to win, this opens the door for anybody that can try to make the claim that
you got people suing other people. You got people afraid to write music because they're going to get sued regardless of what's done. Like, this breaks apart the. Basically, if this case were to win for the Spirit side of things,
okay,
if this case were to be won by Spirit at any level, especially at the Supreme Court level,
yeah, this opens that door.
Yeah, the issue opens up that door for so many things, and there's already been enough speculation on the issues with artist plagiarism. One of the big things, do you remember the song Blurred Lines?
Yeah, I was actually thinking Robin Thicke.
Yeah, Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams wrote Blurred Lines. And it turns out that Pharrell Williams has actually written the entire thing. But the first thing they said was, hey, like they were wondering, you know, how'd you come up with the sound? They're like, well, we were taking this influence from a Marvin Gaye song.
Yeah.
And when you hear the Marvin Gaye song, you hear a lot of style similarity.
Yeah,
like they're going specifically. Yeah, it's the same style of music.
But not necessarily the same song.
It is not necessarily the same song. Do you know what happened in that case?
Didn't Marvin Gaye's estate win?
Yes.
And that was a
Robin
big deal.
Thicke and Pharrell lost.
Yeah.
Yes, because that opens up the door for a lot of other issues. So if you do a song in the issue comes down to if you do a song in the style of another artist that's very reminiscent of things that they may or may not have done, they may be able to come after you.
That's scary because then you can't. I mean, what
it's
does
like
that
doing
mean?
A song in the likeness of another artist.
Only one band's allowed to do that type of music.
That completely, think about it, that completely uproots Greta Van Fleet's entire sound.
Well, there you go.
Right?
Just the first thing that comes to my mind
is
if any band wanted to try to come out as a ska band now and all the old ska bands that disappeared trying to glom onto the ska band. No, that's our
right.
sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the boss tones to come out of the woodwork and,
right, exactly.
and whatnot.
So when you have something that's done like in homage to something else, you shouldn't, if it's done intentionally in homage to something else. And here's the funny part is that if I remember correctly, the chord progression of both songs were not this. They obviously the style was ripped straight off of it,
yeah,
but it was played at a different tempo and the chord progressions were different. And there was so much to it. However, this is completely different because it is literally just taking a chord progression that has existed since the invention of westernized music. We're talking Bach and Beethoven.
No, not even westernized music. Chromatic scale is actually in Eastern music as well.
Then there you go.
Chinese, Japanese music.
We're looking at, okay.
Just a fun thing for you to do.
Thought that they had more notes, though.
No, no, they do the 12. On the high E,
uh-huh.
On the high E, just play, especially do it on all of the frets that have the dots,
uh-huh.
You know, 5, 7, whatever. Just play those notes
uh-huh.
And try not to get a Asian sound to your music.
Interesting.
Seriously, I'll show you after we're done.
Yeah.
I'll just play some stuff to show you that you can get they had the chromatic scale and they had they were using pentatonic scale, which you can get a lot of Asian sound out of that too.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's just a simple chord progression.
What
happened today in the article that you read me was because of the implications of this, right?
Yes,
because
there are a lot of artists.
There
are a lot of artists that have actually joined on Led Zeppelin's side and are trying to watch this case to see the validity of it because it's gotten blown out way bigger than it was initially.
Well, again,
this is not just about a single song. So when you have, here's the thing, like, this is really important for literally anybody that writes music.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You have people that were not necessarily supportive of Led Zeppelin before and some people that definitely were. And you can deny their validity as somebody for, and I'm not meaning you personally, whatever your reason is to like or not like these guys are legends.
The implications of what this kind of win for Spirit could do, it opens the doors for many other artists to have to worry about anything that they've written.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, getting into it here, other artists have joined in. Sean Lennon is one of them, as well as Korn and Tool and entire organizations.
Well, those two are very interesting.
Yeah.
In the sense that that they are kind of...
I mean, Tool is even covered.
Tool is covered. Covered Zeppelin. But I'm thinking more of the fact that those two bands are very, very... what's the word I want to use? Individual in their style.
Yes.
In that you hear a Korn song, you hear a Tool song. If you have any knowledge of their music, it's immediately understood that it's their song. They have their own very distinctive styles to them.
Absolutely.
And they are almost the examples in many ways. Like if you're talking modern progressive metal, Tool is definitely a band that is one of the first ones that you bring out
as absolutely
modern progressive metal.
Yeah.
When you're talking new metal, literally the band of new metal to really bring out is Korn.
They're one of the most established, for sure.
If I'm introducing somebody to new metal, Korn is one of the first bands I'm going to have them
for sure
listen to because they really help to personify that sound.
Very much so.
And so, I mean, these are bands that are the kind of seen as the leaders in their specific style of music. So I can understand their desire to be involved in something like this because this can change the entire fate of how music is dealt with, how ownership of music is dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a crazy thing.
It's pretty crazy. So now it has taken the case where major artists have found extreme significance in this case. We knew everybody was paying attention to it, but now we've got legal backing.
And they're putting their name and their
So we're looking at a short list real quick of people that have joined. Said this earlier. Sean Lennon, as well as Korn, Tool, but you've also got entire organization. The Nashville Songwriters Association International.
Wow.
The Songwriters of North America. Let's see. 1, 2, 3 artists. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, I'm not familiar with those organizations, I'm guessing those are decent.
Well, the Nashville Songwriters Association is flipping gargantuan.
Oh yeah, that's like, I mean, so many people write music there.
The Songwriters Association International, the reason why that's the case is because they cover legal issues and aspects of Nashville, not necessarily Nashville local artists, but that's the entirety of country music.
What most people don't realize is there's a lot of acts that go and record and do their songwriting in Nashville that aren't necessarily country music acts.
Yeah, exactly. This is something that's going to see. I could see Max Martin being involved.
Interestingly,
in this
somehow.
Whenever that kicks in.
Do you know a pop star who does his recording work and stuff in Nashville as well? Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah totally.
He owns
some of the best musicians on the planet live in Nashville.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good stuff out of Nashville musically. But, well, this is an interesting thing to have brought to light. Hopefully, whenever you guys are listening to Led Zeppelin, you kind of get the understanding that this case may have some big implications. Mike is going to make sure to link the article that he was reading that houses this new information.
Yeah, we'll go with a couple of them. There was one from Blabbermouth and then one from, I believe it was digitalmusicnews.com, okay. The ones I'm referencing for this. But yeah, man, it's pretty crazy stuff.
Bring them
and I'll link the videos for both Stairway to Heaven and for Taurus
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is some good information. This kind of gives us, and it's interesting for even us too. I mean, again, Mike is a musician writing his own music, making sure that his things are protected. And then if the music barrier is broken down as far as being able to copyright a scale regardless of what type of scale it is, what else can they start to try to copyright to take away people's ability to be creative?
Yeah,
you never know. Anyway, we're gonna take a break right now. We'll come back and we're gonna talk about a whole different subject. This is my subject. We're gonna come back to talk about sandwiches.
Of all nice things, little, nice little veer off into another direction.
Well, it's reminiscent of what we talked about last week. We were talking about food last week, and yeah. and after listening to the podcast last week, because I do like to try to listen to them to make sure exactly how things flowed and how things sounded.
For sure.
I started thinking about sandwiches, and I came across an article about sandwiches.
That sounds fantastic.
And I had to share it. So, all right, we'll be back in a bit. Enjoy.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. Mike actually, during our break, Mike did a little more research on his article.
Yeah.
That he again will be, connecting to, linking to.
Yes.
The podcast. Go ahead and let everybody
know
what you
don't mind. Okay. Yeah. So I have a little correction to make. So 123 artists I thought was an organization. I was incorrect. That's actually a total of 123 artists.
Okay.
Have signed on along with the Songwriters Association. So that's a pretty large number when it comes down to that the Zeppelin lawsuit.
That is a decent
pretty crazy
number.
Stuff.
Okay, so just see, we're even wrong sometimes, both of us, and we like to make sure that when we find out that we are, we correct our mistakes. For instance, in I believe it was the last podcast, I erroneously said that 111 was a prime number, when in fact it is not. It's actually divisible by 37.
I did not know that.
Neither did I until I did the research found out.
7 by 3 is, oh wow, you're right.
Because when I was listening to it, I was like, is it really a prime number? Let me check. I was wrong. And I, in fact, on Facebook posted a comment saying that it was wrong.
30 by 3 is 90. Yep. And 7 by 3 is 21. That adds to 111. Yeah, you're right.
And by the way, you just used the new Common Core math.
I know. That's how I've been thinking about math a lot. Like when you break down the number like that, it's a lot easier to handle. You break it into smaller numbers.
That's actually how my brain has always done math. So Common Core always made sense to me when they came out with it. It didn't make sense to other people because most people do their math on pieces of paper and whatnot. I was taught to do it in my head because my mom wanted to get the best value at the grocery store. No joke.
Dude, that's really funny because I remember a lot of people when they were arguing about the Common Core math thing, the first thing I used to tell them is, you ever count change back?
Yeah.
What do? You count it backwards from the goal number.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
every time.
It people's brains work differently. Anyway, what we're going to talk about now, totally kind of different subject, but again, I mentioned it before the break, we're going to talk about sandwiches. And specifically,
I like sandwiches.
I do too. I think sandwiches are one of the best inventions ever. Of course, there are those who would argue that a hamburger falls within the rough realm of a sandwich.
Technically speaking, I guess. The only difference is the fact that there's beef in the middle. But that's not the case because a roast beef sandwich, right?
I mean, it's a hamburger is its own specific identified thing. While it falls under the rough umbrella of a sandwich, it's still a hamburger, so it's its own separate thing.
But a sloppy Joe. It's not a burger either, is it?
Not necessarily, no.
Because technically that would just be a ground beef sandwich, but a burger is also a ground beef sandwich.
Yeah, well, that's why I think I think burgers kind of are in their own separate category, but it doesn't really matter for the specifics of what we're talking about today.
Okay.
I actually came across this article. It's based on a nonpartisan research organization called YouGov, Y-O-U-G-O-V, that conducted a poll of 1,223 people asking which sandwich they liked the best.
Oh, okay.
And so this is basically a list of, let me see here, mathing 15 sandwiches.
Cool.
That are listed in, I'm going to give them in the order of, we'll start at 15 and work our way down.
It's the top 15 sandwiches in the United States.
Well, from at least what these 1,223 people that were polled are saying are their top 15 sandwiches and which one they consider the best.
I like this. Okay? I like this idea. Let's go.
It's kind of neat. And again, we will be linking the article that I saw this from to the podcast.
Okay.
So starting at number 15 is a French dip.
That's at 15?
At number 15 is the French dip.
I am shocked. French dips are awesome.
I think French dips really, the real key to them, there's two things that are the key. The bread.
Yes.
And the au jus.
I guess. I mean, French dips are pretty basic, but.
It's just beef and meat, cheese and it's hot meat.
Typically. I have had a French dip with grilled onion, though, and that's pretty good.
Some grilled onion, but the thing is, the point of the French dip is it is to be dipped in the au jus.
Okay.
As part of the eating of it.
Okay.
And that's why the bread has to be strong enough to soak up the au jus and hold its shape, not just fall apart when it soaks up the au jus.
Right.
And the au jus has to have an appropriate flavor. It can't be exactly the same as the meat, but it also can't be like way too different of a flavor of the meat.
Right, right.
And it has that's the real key to the French dip sandwich, at least in my opinion.
Okay, I can agree with that. Yeah,
15. I'm not sure that I'm okay with it there. Like you said, I would put it a little higher. Let's see where the list goes and what you feel from that.
I could kind of see it being ranked as 15 because there's a lot of factors outside of the sandwich itself that create how good the sandwich is. Right. Yeah. I could see that being that it's got a handicap because it requires an outside influence in order. Because you can't just straight have a – I mean, you can have a roast beef sandwich without French dip.
Yeah, without
you
the
can do that. But there's a lot more to a regular roast beef sandwich. So.
Well, and a roast beef sandwich, which actually does make another appearance on the list, roast beef sandwiches itself, is a different thing entirely. The meat on a roast beef sandwich is really different than the meat that should be on a French dip sandwich.
Okay.
We're talking a slightly different cut of meat and quality of meat.
Okay.
Okay, so the next one on the list, this would be 14 on this list. And actually, funny enough, they do these in percentages. The highest percentage, let me see if I can see it well enough, 79%, and the lowest percentage is 45%. People saying that, you know, these are their favorite sandwiches.
Oh,
these
wow.
Sandwiches they like. So it's more of a percentage-based thing, but I'm giving it in a list version. They don't have it in a list version in the way they're doing it. So the 45% was the French dip, and again, going up to
what would be 79%. That's top 15. 45% are saying that.
Yeah.
The 15th ranked. Wow. Okay. Continue.
So, next one, Reuben.
Okay.
Which I can say I've never had an official Reuben.
I've never either.
I've got no bearing on this one. I've had corned beef in a sandwich, but not as an official Reuben with the dressing and the appropriate rye bread and whatnot.
Right. I may have had one. No, I've never had an official Reuben.
So yeah, I think I had one
just because I was curious, like from an Arby's or something like that, many moons ago.
My question would be: is a Reuben as important to you as a French dip? I think that one's a little off. I would love to know where specifically they did this survey.
Right.
Next one, which would be number 13, meatball.
Meatball sub?
Yes.
Those are good, man.
I know. I would rank that a lot higher. Especially because
I'm surprised, like, what are they putting at the top is the question.
I think you'll be a little shocked.
Okay. Okay.
I think you will be.
Oh, is this going to be like the fast food fries list?
It might be for you. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
It might be. Number 12, egg salad. How do you rate egg salad?
My wife loves egg salad sandwiches.
Like I do too. But
I am not a fan. I just don't like the texture of egg salad.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's kind of that weird.
It's got
a little bit of chunky inside of this viscous kind of.
You know, it's the graininess of the yolk.
I get that.
The texture of it is something that you should spackle your walls with.
How are you with deviled eggs?
I'm fine with deviled eggs, but here's the thing about deviled eggs.
Yeah, go.
they separate the textures, where you have the yolk inside of
the center of the hard-boiled egg. That makes total sense to me.
Right? So I love the hell out of deviled eggs.
Now, how do you eat deviled eggs? Do you take how many bites does a deviled egg take you?
Cram that whole damn thing in your mouth.
Good job. Yeah. Good job, sir. Good job. I get in a lot of trouble with deviled eggs. That's one of those party things that like...
What do you... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just shove the... Yeah.
It's one of those that I will eat... Shove the whole egg. I will eat so many deviled eggs.
It's already half an egg.
The problem then comes if it's one of, if it's like a barbecue or a cookout or something, somebody's made the deviled eggs. Typically, those are the type of places where they serve beer as well. And,
right.
And eggs and beer do not mix well in my system.
See, here's the thing about deviled eggs is if you were to take one bite, you're going to take a bite of the yolk side of the egg. Right? So then all you have is egg white left over.
If I took the first bite, it's always the egg white side first. If I, for some reason, have to take two bites.
Really?
I always do. Yeah, because you get the part you don't like over with first and enjoy the okay. the other part. It's like if I eat, going back to our previous
I
cereal.
I see that. I tend to go, like, with me, it's like what makes the least mess.
No.
You know what makes the least mess? Mess?
The whole thing in the mouth is
better. Yeah, put the whole thing in your mouth.
That's just, but that's what she said. But anyway, Like example, I'm a big cereal person. I love eating cereal.
Right.
I'm one of those weird people that eat cereal dry with no milk, no nothing. I'll just eat a bowl of cereal just by itself. If I'm eating Lucky Charms, for instance, I will eat all the like little cereal parts of it and leave all of the marshmallows.
Okay.
And then once I've eaten all the cereal out and there's this little pile of marshmallows all stuck together, then I will eat the marshmallows. Because you eat the parts you don't like first so that the other part's a treat. Unless, of course, and this has happened to me before, this is one of those dangers of having children.
Right.
I have eaten like 90% of the cereal portion and have my marshmallows and then have to get up and go do something.
And then the marshmallows disappear.
Come to find that my child has stolen my marshmallows that I, in their mind, meticulously picked out for them to be able to enjoy. By the way, you can buy on Amazon an entire bag of just the marshmallows. I have not done it yet because I know if I do, I will eat the whole bag. I think we've talked about this before or something.
That just sounds like a mistake and a half.
It would be. Okay, so we're at number 12. That was egg salad.
Okay.
Number 11, tuna.
Okay.
Now, see, I could rank
tuna above egg salad personally.
I would put egg salad above tuna personally because I like tuna sandwich. Don't get me wrong. Although I'm one of those people. If you're doing a tuna sandwich, what do you put in it?
But why would you rank a tuna above a French dip
or a meatball?
Yeah.
I mean, unless
miraculous tuna exists in this sandwich.
One that's made by Jordana Brewster for Paul Walker. That's about the only one I could think of. Okay. Fast and the Furious reference right there. You don't remember the first Fast and the Furious movie?
I never watched them.
In the first, you've never?
None of them. Never was into them.
Incredulous stare. Seriously, you've never seen any of them.
Maniacal laugh.
Okay, time out.
What movie? I'll watch the Muppets first,
okay,
pal.
Okay, thank you. At least you knew which movie that was from.
Yeah.
So none of the Fast and the Furious movies?
None of them. Never was interested in them.
They're worth watching just to see how a movie that is rooted in as much realism as a Point Break remake can be rooted in
right
turn into a car chase on a frozen lake in Siberia where a submarine is involved in the car chase.
That just sounds so weird. It's such a bro movie.
And Vin Diesel,
the franchise.
Vin Diesel is able to redirect a torpedo that's going across the ice with his hand.
What the hell?
The thing is, this is so dumb. It is, but they evolved from what was an attempt at making, again, just a kind of B action movie. It's like the ultimate B action movie series ever.
Oh, man.
And they're worth watching just for the craziness of it. In one of them, they drive a supercar between the multiple towers of the Burj Khalifa in freaking Dubai.
Are you serious?
Yes, it goes. They drive it out the window and into another tower, and out the window into another tower, and jump out of it inside the tower, and then the car. Seriously, it is so over the top. It's like watching it, knowing none of this is realistic. This is basically almost a superhero movie, and it's so much fun to watch.
Oh my goodness!
Because you know the beats it's going to take, and then the people they've brought in the later parts of the series, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell's in it.
Scott Eastwood has been brought into it. There's a moment where The Rock literally picks up Scott Eastwood, turns him upside down, and holds him up against a wall. They have...
So dumb.
I
get it. I get why that would be entertaining,
The most
though.
Recent one that came out, the Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw. Did you see the meme I shared?
Yes, but just the pairing, just the pairing of The Rock and Jason Statham. This is like the fourth movie where they've been basically antagonistic toward each other in this series. It is such a good pairing between the two of them. The chemistry is amazing. It's so fun to watch them.
Oh, man.
And you have to go. The first one tries to be as realistic as possible. It really does. It tries to get itself rooted in realism. The second one basically tries to happen without Vin Diesel being involved. The third one was like Vin Diesel basically said, okay, well, they made one without me. I guess I better hop back into this. And it just, from the third one, it goes off the rails. Because the second one's a little bit wonky. But again, the first and second one, they try to stay as much rooted in reality as possible.
Right.
Third one, they just start going crazy. And it just gets crazier and crazier. There's one where they're dragging through...
God, that does sound like fun to watch. Through to be a city, completely, what you're telling me makes me want to see
through
them.
Through a city in Brazil, I think. I think it's Rio in Brazil. I'm not sure which city for sure. They are dragging...
How the hell are they taking all these cars all these places, man?
They get new cars to the various places. But they are dragging... a safe that's like a 15 by 15 foot room that they have pulled out from underneath a police department, and they are dragging it through the city with two cars. It's just insane. It's fun to watch just for the insanity of it.
Right.
And the actors that they bring in to play the various roles, it is a complete like overreaction to everything, but it's so much fun to watch.
Okay.
But anyway, in the first movie, Paul Walker's an undercover cop who's trying to get involved with finding out who's stealing, who's robbing, show you how old it is, who's robbing VHS TV players, TVs that have the VHS players in, you know, built into them.
Oh my gosh.
They're being robbed from semi-trucks by people in these souped up cars. Yeah, that's how old
they're
this thing
robbing
is.
VCR TVs?
Yes, VCR TVs are being robbed. And they're making apparently tons of money off of doing this. And so he's undercover with the street racing.
Didn't this come out in DVD? Like they had, didn't they have?
No, this is in the late 90s. So DVD was still.
I thought it was early 2000s.
Might've been early 2000s.
I knew that DVDs had taken like.
They were, but like people still had VCRs. Most of Blockbuster was still VHS.
Oh man.
But they. he's an undercover cop.
I kind of want to see that now just to see how dated it is.
Well, he's an undercover cop in the street racing scene trying to find the people responsible for this. Again, it's basically a remake of Point Break. It really is.
That's
a remake
funny.
Of Point Break in that, you know, again, Keanu Reeves in Point Break is the undercover cop going with the surfing scene to find these bank robbers.
Guys, I got an idea. Point Break with cars.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically.
Take out actually, the surfing, actually, add a bunch of cars, no, the and director, stolen TVs instead of actual money.
The director actually had read about an article about street racing culture and decided to make that as part of the remake of this basically Point Break remake. But the way he's trying
was
to get
it. Was it originally cast as a Point Break remake? Was that the
That's kind of how they looked at it. Yeah, they knew that they were
like,
doing
hey, guys,
that.
We're going to remake Point Break.
That's kind of how they looked at it. But anyway, Paul Walker's character was frequenting a restaurant that was owned by Vin Diesel's character. Vin Diesel's sister, Jordana Brewster, was the actress playing that part.
Okay.
Was the one serving
we
food.
We have now come full circle. So, by the way, this episode is about sandwiches.
So the tuna sandwich reference, he would order the tuna sandwich and it was terrible. They would comment on how terrible it was, but he'd order and eat it every single time he showed up there trying to get involved with the stuff. And there's a whole sequence about how nobody likes the tuna there, but he shows up to have it anyway, and it's a thing.
Is there
and there's references throughout
ask,
the other movies? They do reference back to the tuna.
They go back to the tuna
occasionally.
I was going to say, are they going to posthumously reference the tuna sandwich in the last movie that he was in?
They didn't reference the tuna sandwich in that movie, no. But I will tell
that
you
that is
much,
such a missed opportunity.
No, not really. Because if you've seen all of the movies leading up to the last one and the way they handle his character, his brothers actually had to help finish the shooting because all his stuff wasn't done. The last scene that he's in is reminiscent of one of the first scenes that he's in.
Cool.
In it, and his character and Vin Diesel's character have become like brothers, literally. Yeah. I mean, in the sense that he's Paul Walker's has a kid with his sister, with Vin Diesel's character sister.
Oh.
But like they become so close, and then the way he drives off in a different direction and stuff, it's a thing.
Cool.
I can say this much. I get emotional watching it, having seen all the movies and seen the connection between them as growing together and whatnot. It's an emotional thing. But anyway, that's where my tuna sandwich reference came in. I had to explain it all because Mike's not seen the Fast and Furious movies.
I think we've gone off about this for 5 minutes talking about a tuna sandwich.
Hey, that's
all right. Well, no, we talked about Fast and the Furious all due to a tuna sandwich.
Sandwiches are important. Right? All right, so that was number 11 on the list. Number 10 on the list.
Oh, we hadn't even hit the 10 yet.
Number 10 on the list.
All right, we got a minute for each.
That's going to take longer than that.
Okay.
Pulled pork.
Those are good.
They are. If they're done right, they're good. They are really good.
Those are good.
But top 10, I would say. Yeah.
We had slow cooker pulled pork. We made slow cooker pulled pork sandwiches, and they were awesome.
The key is the bread. That's like bun worthy. You don't really get normal
bread. You got to get real buns. You can't just throw rainbow bread on that.
No. And cheddar cheese. If you're going to put cheese on it, shredded is kind of good.
Shredded cheddar, it's
the same kind of texture, roughly. You can put a whole slice, but then you're biting through the slice. The shredded cheese kind of mixes in with the pork a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Next one on the list, number 9, PB&J. I would think that's a staple, dude.
Yeah.
And this is from somebody who didn't
eat jelly. What else is above that? Like, it's really making me curious. Like, what's there?
I think there's some that are going to make you irritated.
Okay.
Next up, this would be number 8, mm-hmm. bacon. Now, specifically just bacon.
Just a straight up sandwich with bacon?
Yes.
I didn't even know that was like technically considered a sandwich. I mean, technically anything could be considered a sandwich if it's between, you know, two pieces of bread.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've never had just a straight pure bacon sandwich. I've had a BLT.
That will be coming up.
I would hope so, because BLTs are awesome, especially if you make them right.
Yes.
But so, just a straight bacon sandwich. How is that recategorized as another sandwich?
I don't know. But because the lettuce and tomato aren't there, and the BLT is a very specific sandwich.
Yeah, but I mean, that's weird.
It'd be like putting a Monte Cristo
on. What else are they putting on a bacon sandwich? Like, what's the are there any condiments on it, or is it just straight bacon? Bacon on bread.
If it was me, it would be mayonnaise and bacon. That would be it.
I mean, I could understand that. I don't think I would ever have that. I'm super
white, and I put mayonnaise on most of my sandwiches. But
I tend to avoid mayonnaise like the plague.
No, I put it on most of my sandwiches.
And if I put mayonnaise on anything, it's an extremely thin layer. It's something to have something stuck to the bun.
Oh,
that's
by the
point.
By the way, I have a report back, if you remember from our conversation, about having people putting mayonnaise on their chili dogs. You remember that portion of the conversation?
Yes.
The report back is the reason for putting mayonnaise on the chili dog is to create a moisture barrier along the bun so that the bun doesn't become too soggy as a result of the chili.
What?
That's the reason for mayonnaise on the chili dog. I'm just saying.
I don't agree, and that's fine. I don't understand that logic at all.
Neither do I, but still. Mm-mm. Moving on. Number 7 on the list.
Okay.
The club sandwich.
Okay. I can understand that.
I guess.
I can understand that.
I mean, isn't that just a BLT with turkey on it? Or chicken?
Yeah.
I mean,
for the most part, I mean, yeah, for sure.
Number 6.
This honestly
it's a weird list, huh?
Yeah, this honestly like makes you think of what extra stuff are they putting on it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can get you. Number 6. BLT. There's your BLT right there.
There it is. Okay. So I knew it was going to be there.
All right, so now we're in the top 5.
All right.
Do you have any? Are there any that you haven't seen yet that you are expecting to see? Or heard? You haven't really seen it. Any that you haven't heard?
Not fully. Okay. I don't know. I'm kind of riding this around. I'm ready to be surprised because I don't know what order and what stuff is going to be up at the top. Because most of the stuff that I really like, I've already heard. Like maybe a chicken sandwich, like a grilled chicken sandwich or something like that, if that counts.
Are you serious?
It's within the top 5.
Okay,
no. It has to be, right?
Hold on to that crap because that's something else.
Okay.
I'm shocked.
I mean, are those considered burgers?
Let's go with the rest of the list.
No, let's go with the rest of the list. This is like the is cereal soup conversation. You know what I mean? Like what counts as a sandwich? If a burger doesn't count as a sandwich, what counts as a sandwich?
Okay. So, Then let's keep going. Let's keep going with this. This is interesting.
I'm confused, but please continue.
Number five, ham sandwich.
Okay.
Now, speaking as somebody who does not like ham at all, I would not have it anywhere on my list, but I understand how people like ham
sandwiches.
I
could combine ham with other meats, depending. Like, I like turkey and ham, but, I mean,
nah,
I don't know. I don't
can't
know.
Get past ham's flavor.
I get you. I get you. Please continue.
Number four, roast beef.
That's how high it is on the list?
Number four, roast beef.
In combination with the other stuff that's been on the list so far? They threw a roast beef sandwich that far away from a French dip?
Yeah.
A French dip is like an awesome roast beef sandwich.
Yeah, French dip is way better than a roast beef sandwich.
I'm confused. Yes, please continue. I'm intrigued and mildly frustrated at the
Number three, this is where I get really frustrated because number three, in my mind, this is the best basis for a sandwich ever.
Okay.
The best base, because you can do anything. Almost every single, because somebody will probably find something that doesn't fit.
Okay.
But almost every single condiment or topping or addition to a sandwich, including almost every single bread choice you could possibly have, works with this base sandwich.
Okay.
This is like the base model that you can do almost anything to, and it still works.
Okay.
And that's the turkey sandwich. To me, that is the most important sandwich that we have, because turkey can stand up to at least 10 different cheese choices.
True, almost it's really universal.
Vegetable, yeah, almost every vegetable you could possibly think to throw on a sandwich, any bread, any condiments. I mean, sorry, for those people who love freaking avocados, right?
Avocado goes on turkey sandwiches.
Turkey is like the place that people love to have it.
If we're looking at somebody who is an avocado enthusiast, you're not going to throw it on ham. You're not going to throw it on roast beef. You're going to throw it on turkey.
You are.
Yeah, 100%. I can agree with that completely. You can even technically throw it on chicken, but turkey is where it belongs.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I don't like it, but I know that that's where people love to have it.
Yeah, totally. I can agree with that.
To me, if I'm doing a list of sandwich and not including hamburgers in the sandwich conversation,
for sure,
turkey is the number one sandwich because you can do so much with it. The limitations are very little. I mean, I believe, for instance, that Swiss is the best cheese, but turkey and American, for people who, for some reason, believe American cheese is cheese.
I'm into turkey and provolone, actually.
Turkey and provolone I get. Turkey and cheddar. Pepper jack. There's some pepper jack.
Pepper jack is great cheese too.
I would definitely have turkey with Havarti or Munster.
Oh, turkey with Havarti is good too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, to me, it's like it's so many. Hell, a turkey sandwich is one I would dip in nacho cheese.
Oh man.
Yeah. It's just so
you could do
universal.
That on roast beef.
You could on the roast beef, but like again. Turkey, but
yeah,
would go
no,
with all
turkey
of it.
Is super universal. It's so adaptable
to me,
in any situation.
To me, three is wrong because
here's the thing:
it's the best
add turkey
to
a BLT.
There you go.
Done. Yeah, and it still would be awesome.
Yes, it's just one of those. It's one of those sandwiches that is the sandwich, I believe, that is the universal sandwich.
Yeah,
but they put it at number three. Number two, this is the fun one for me because I wouldn't have thought of this as a sandwich, but you pulled it out. Grilled chicken sandwich.
I mean, yeah, it would make sense. I don't think it deserves to be that high on the list.
I don't believe either.
It's an unfair advantage.
I don't either.
It almost feels like, that's the thing, it almost feels like a
almost
burger type. Yeah.
Yeah, almost burger, but not.
I mean, it's not, but it's still, like, I understand it's called a grilled chicken sandwich, and I like grilled chicken sandwiches. There are many different options you can have with a grilled chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
Put a lot of different toppings on it. Personally, I like throwing.
And again, chicken has almost the same nature as turkey in the sense that it is a palate that you can build so many other things on top of it.
See, that's the thing. You can have a barbecued grilled chicken sandwich. Yeah. I mean, like marinated barbecued grilled chicken is awesome.
Yeah, and so I kind of get it, but like I would still put turkey above it.
Put turkey above it. It's as a base of a sandwich.
Yeah.
It's the best sandwich base. Personally, I think it deserves to be number one, to be honest.
What?
The turkey.
Okay.
Turkey, because you could throw it in combination with every other sandwich, and it's fantastic.
It's not number one. Something else is number one.
Okay. What's number one?
Now, we said hamburger. I said hamburger's not in the equation, and it's not. I wasn't lying there. I wasn't trying to do some surprise reveal.
Okay.
What haven't you heard?
A burger?
Other than a burger, what other sandwich have you not heard?
Okay, so we did BLT, we did roast beef.
Yep.
We put ham in there. The ham is on there, right?
Ham's on there. I'll recap real quick.
I was going to say.
Real quick recap. French dip, Reuben, meatball, egg salad, tuna, pulled pork, PB&J, bacon, club, BLT, ham, roast beef, turkey, and grilled chicken.
I'm trying to think of what's left. It's just things that I, oh man, this is going to be the one that doesn't deserve to be on the list, isn't it? I'm really trying to remember what it would be.
It's
but,
so out there in comparison to all the other ones.
Really?
Yeah.
What would it be? Because you said PB&J.
Yeah.
You said.
Which at this point, PB&J is the real outlier.
I don't understand why just straight bacon is on there. That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense. But again, PB&J, let me give you the hint. PB&J is the outlier. Because there's one thing different about the PB&J compared to all the other sandwiches.
Is this going to be like peanut butter and banana or something crazy like that?
No.
Okay.
It's not crazy.
So we're talking like conventional sandwiches, not this.
Oh, yes. Conventional.
Okay. What is it?
Grilled cheese.
Oh, man. That is a toss-up.
That's a heck of a thing, isn't it?
Why did I not think of that?
Because you're not thinking of it in the same. All these, like I said, that's why peanut butter and jelly.
Everything
is kind
else
of the,
has like there's meat, there's extra toppings, there's all this stuff. But grilled, wow.
PB&J is the other outlier in that it doesn't have a meat in it. It has a protein source, but it's not meat, and that's where grilled cheese makes the difference. Grilled,
oh, that's a toss up. Like I'm not mad at that.
It's an interesting thing in the sense that I mean grilled cheese is a legitimate sandwich. It's something that does need
for
to be,
sure.
Especially again. I'm not talking about the crappy one made with American cheese product.
We're talking like the gourmet
really
stuff.
Good grilled cheese.
Yeah. We're not talking Kraft cheese on top of rainbow bread here that's thrown into a pan.
Yeah.
No, we're talking like if you actually properly grill it and you use
real cheese.
Actual real cheese. Combinations of cheeses.
Mike, where does American cheese belong? Where does American cheese
belong? I totally will
belong?
Gladly eat American cheese, James.
But where does it
but
belong?
But I understand I understand your opinion is it belongs in the trash.
Thank you. I'll get you there one day. I'll get you there.
But no, dude, like grilled cheese, like any cheese counts with grilled cheese.
Yeah.
You're talking like any, like Havarti, Brie, and maybe not necessarily together. But
my favorite is like, Havarti and Munster. I love
Havarti and
Munster.
Okay.
It's a good combination.
Mozzarella. Dude, grilled mozzarella sandwich?
Actually, you can get a provolone mozzarella mixed cheese, where it's like it's the two flavors basically blended together in one cheese.
What?
Yes.
A prozzarella?
It's just called provolone. It's called provolone mozzarella.
Oh.
They don't get portmanteau with the name.
Well, why not? It's fun.
It could be. I think it's fun, but that's that you can buy the cheese that has the flavor characteristics of both, and it melts so beautifully. It's so good on sandwiches. I've had it before for my grilled cheese.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
It is. It's fantastic.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Dude, like, yeah, okay. I think I'm okay with grilled cheese being number one on this list, as many mistakes as there are.
I would still like turkey to be number one with grilled cheese as the number two.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that I just think turkey is the open palate for a sandwich, and it's just, you can do so much with it.
You know what it is about turkey sandwiches? Turkey sandwiches are just like, I feel like having a turkey sandwich. Let's slap together a turkey sandwich. That sounds good. When you talk about having a grilled cheese sandwich, you mention anything to anybody else about, dude, I could go for a grilled cheese sandwich right now. Their eyes light up.
Okay,
they're like,
I get it.
Dude, that sounds fantastic.
You're talking about the comfort food aspect.
Even
if it is a crappy one.
A grilled sandwich
Kraft,
is Disneyland in comparison to a turkey sandwich.
Okay, I get what you're saying there.
Like, people get excited about even hearing about a grilled cheese sandwich.
No, I get you. Turkey sandwich can just be like, unless you're a sandwich aficionado.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, a turkey sandwich, whatever. Like, grilled cheese, what kind of grilled cheese? Especially if it's like...
Yeah.
If it's like, you know, you're talking about a gourmet grilled cheese sandwich, how is it gourmet? Interestingly, I was watching a new, well, not new, but relatively new within the last couple of years, Netflix series called The Chef Show.
Fun.
Now, it follows Jon Favreau, the actor Jon Favreau.
Cool.
And Chef Roy Choi, taco truck guy.
Cool. I don't know who that is.
Apparently, Chef Roy Choi was his consultant on the movie The Chef. Did you ever see the Jon Favreau movie The Chef?
I've heard of it.
You need to watch it.
Okay.
The reason Roy Choi was brought in as a consultant was because Favreau wanted to finally do a cooking movie that showed proper technique.
Cool.
In the kitchen and proper actual cooking stuff. And Roy Choi said the only way he'd be involved is if they showed the true right techniques and how films normally mess up cooking.
Yeah.
They wanted it to be done the right way, to show everything the appropriate way that it's supposed to be done.
Okay, for
sure.
And
they made sure to do that. Well, there's a scene in there where he makes a grilled cheese sandwich, and he's got like three or four different cheeses
mm-hmm.
in this grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the movie. Well, in the show that he did, it was basically a, you know, semi-documentary. Favreau and Roy Choi are going around to different celebrity friends
mm-hmm.
and different kitchens and cooking different meals, including the meals that were made in the movie.
Oh, cool.
And they show him making the grilled cheese sandwich. And it's just, it's almost a, it's definitely a food porn moment to watch him make the grilled cheese sandwich.
Cool.
And as he's doing it with all the different cheese that's on it, and the just, it's a beautiful thing. So you're right. I will concede grilled cheese can be at the top of the list, because really it's, there's so many things that can be done with it, even like, say, with the turkey. But the difference is you still have a turkey sandwich. Right? It's still yeah. turkey within there.
Yeah.
You're still going to have the flavor of turkey regardless of what else you add to it.
Right.
The cheese flavor, the melting profile, all the little bits that make each individual cheese its own thing.
Yeah.
Changes the sandwich each time
yeah,
to where
totally.
It's a whole different thing. You don't have a base of anything the same. It can be your own special creation, so I can see.
Yeah.
I can see how grilled cheese stops.
Yeah, I am not in, you know, I'm not in any type of disagreement with that list.
Yeah.
I think that sounds that's pretty, like, dude, I'm telling you, I am in way more agreement with this list than I was with that fries list. That fries list was crazy.
That fries list was insane. And I'm looking to find an appropriate hamburger list so that we can have it as part of our great hamburger discussion.
Yes.
Because by the way, last time we saw each other, I actually stopped. Did I tell you that I stopped at the, I finally got the chance to stop at the California Institution.
Oh, yes. Burgers. How is that?
I actually was able to stop and get a burger and try to, and drive home, from this area eating that burger.
Uh-huh. What do you think?
It was worse than the first time I had it.
What?
It was absolutely God awful. I
what
barely
happened,
was able
dude?
To finish it. That patty is like paper thin. It's paper thin. It had no flavor. The vegetation had no real flavor. It was disgusting.
Wow.
Worst burger I have ever had in my life.
That's insane.
Worst one ever.
Holy smokes. Okay.
So it was not, I was worried that maybe my first impression was just a bad impression. And also
you're just like, nope, also, full confirm. You're not a fan.
Also, I make fries, fresh cut fries,
uh-huh.
five times better than them.
My yeah,
fresh cut
soggy.
Fries are so much better.
Dude. Wow.
So much better.
I didn't know you were going to have that bad an experience.
It was awful.
Damn.
The wait was like, okay. The wait was one thing. I waited for like 5 minutes sitting there in front of the window.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit annoying. But then to get the food and
you must have caught him on an off time or something like that.
But
how many off times can you catch?
Yeah.
You know, I get it.
It was just awful food.
You know, kudos awful. To you for giving it a second shot.
I understand that A, my taste may change. B, it may have but just been one location. That
right.
I had it at, and that one location was a bad location.
I've had that location multiple times, and I
because like yeah, it's the location that is in closest proximity to your house.
Yeah, yeah,
is the one that I had it at.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just I was really just dumbfounded. I was not happy at all.
Wow,
I was very upset with the food. Just it was awful, awful food.
Well. So
that, I mean, I can say I am not a fan of that place, and I won't be.
We should be looking up one of these lists.
I will find a hamburger list.
Hell, why don't we just make our own? Although we would be in vehement disagreement on many points.
Well, actually, I think I can look up a list, but maybe our homework. We have specific homework for next week. I'll remind you of afterwards.
Yes,
because I have some news.
Okay,
would you like the news?
I mean,
you
right
already
now?
Know the news, but I'm giving some news out to people.
Oh, okay, yes.
The news that you already know is we will be having for our next episode a special guest.
Ooh.
Yes, a special guest is going to come and have some two different discussions with us. The first discussion, the first one isn't really a discussion. We're going to play a game.
I like this
idea. And that's what I think you're all going to be able to hear next week is the game that we're playing. The other discussion is going to be about certain types of films. This gentleman is going to be part of both discussions. We may change up and put one out before the other, but anyway, yeah. Our special guest is a friend of ours, a Mr. Carl Reed.
Yes.
Who's who's been a member of Prilosis and of Digital Havoc, right?
Yep, he has.
And in fact, a current member.
Yes, he is. He is back, actually. I think I just changed the Facebook on it. I still have to update my website and stuff. Okay.
Fantastic. Yeah. I know he was at the show you guys did last week.
He was. And yeah, it went extremely well. Fantastic. We had some video shot and stuff like that. That video will be seen, but it will not be part of an official live footage release, technically speaking.
The sound didn't come out good.
Not so much that. Okay. I wasn't intending on picking up the sound. It actually was part of something else that I have yet to fully announce.
Oh, okay.
So
I know what you're talking about because I'm special and smart. I want to see that stuff. Anyway, Carl will be joining us next week to play a game. And then, like I said, we'll also be doing another movie discussion with him. So you'll hear both of those at some point or another. We'll see which ones you get to hear first. But for this week, I think we are done, right?
I think so.
Mike, can you tell us where people can listen to us?
Well, first off, you can listen to us at thezennialchronicles.com or zencron.com if you want to type less.
Bookmark it.
zencron.com. Also, speaking of Zencron, you could look us up as Zencron on Facebook. So facebook.com/Zencron, twitter.com/Zencron.
there you go.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of words. YouTube? But as far as the audio, YouTube has us in video format, but we are on Google Podcast. We're on TuneIn. We're on Spotify. As far as video, we do have these audio podcasts converted to video on YouTube. If you're listening to us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button if you haven't already so you get updates when we put out a new video. And hit the bell icon. So I'm sorry. Hit the subscribe button so you're subscribed.
Yes.
Hit the bell icon so you're notified when we put out a new video. Yeah. Okay.
And to the person who has commented on a few of our YouTube videos, we will be commenting back to you hopefully within the next day or two.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for the comments, by the way. We have seen them over the weekend, so yes. Yeah, we're very excited to get some feedback on stuff. Thank you so much.
And we both had very busy weekends, so now that we're back to working things, we will definitely make some comments on there
for you. Definitely. Thank you guys so much. What else we got, James?
We're done for the week. We will talk to y'all next week.
You guys have a good one.
Later.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.